Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio via telephone is Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
Awesome. I am fantastic. The sky is...
We didn't do our weather report. How are people going to get through their day if they don't know what the weather was like when we recorded?
Well, I know. So I came home. I was on vacation for about 10 days and a birthday trip vacation. And I came back and my apartment yard, my little apartment is on the hill and it's a part of a house. But anyway, so it's this old farmhouse. But the whole yard is like leaves from here to here. Like when it's, you know, knee deep in the trees all barfing out. And I don't know. I think it's beautiful. But I think it's beautiful because I don't have to be the one who rakes it all up. So that's why I think it's quite nice. And this morning I've been watching right out my window. There's a huge tree and the squirrels have been taking turns coming out of the squirrel hole, coming down. They pick up two leaves, they go back up, they stuff it in the hole. And then the next one comes down and picks up two leaves and still go back up and stuffs it in the hole. I've never seen that before. So I don't know. Just living the dream over here.
Leaves getting ready for winter. I always leave them on the ground because I figure it's going to snow pretty soon. And by the time the snow melts, they're compost. So I'm good. Yeah. I'm good with a few leaves. The neighbor across the street, the colonel, he's every time a leaf hits the ground, he's out there and and picks it up. I saw him, you know how sometimes the leaves, they collect like at the curb. That's just a place where the wind stops blowing them. So that's in front of the house. That's, and I just wait for the street cleaner to go by because, I mean, that's their job. The street, that's them. He had his yard looking all pristine. So he came over and he was picking up the leaves along the curb in front of my house. And I'm like, okay, good job, Colonel. Good job. Yeah. Hey, yes. We got a topic today, but Lisa, I had a play situation I observed the other day that I just thought about it when you're talking about the leaves, because I'm out walking the dogs and we're walking through the leaves on the sidewalk and it's all crunchy and I just love that. And it's a couple days before Halloween and I don't know, about six blocks up the street, it doesn't matter where it was, there's a couple girls sitting on the porch in front of the house. You know, there's the porch and there's a couple steps up to the porch and they're like on the steps using the porch as kind of a countertop, and they're 7, 8, 9 years old, just two girls, and they have a skateboard, they have a roll of duct tape, they've got a couple knives, they have
what
some
kind of knives,
pokey sharp knives,
okay,
they have a couple Barbie dolls and they have a good sized pumpkin,
okay,
and I see this and I go, awesome,
right?
And I said, you guys making a pumpkin coach for the Barbies? And their heads turn in unison, and they're like, how did you know?
You're one of us.
They're just getting ready to start cutting the doors out of this pumpkin. And I wanted to hang around and help with the engineering because I know this is going to be awesome when it's done, but that would be too creepy. The fact that I knew what they were doing was probably creepy enough. But they were just overjoyed that like, hey, somebody gets us. And then we're off. But I love those moments that you kind of catch play happening just out in the wild. And I don't know.
But let me jump in there. Yeah. Let me jump in there. The other thing I like about that is that it's going to come out wrong. I love it when kids see that I'm an ally.
Yeah.
like, I didn't go into it with some kind of, like, I want them to see that I am an ally, that I am a supporter of this kind of play. But I think sometimes just how you respond, I think that's, like, that primal stuff. They realize that this is an adult who's not going to take the knife away. This is an adult who's not going to be like, you don't need that, or get inside. I think kids can sometimes sense that about certain adults, and that is one of the things that I kind of like that about myself.
Yeah, you get that feeling of camaraderie.
Yes.
In those situations. Yeah, I dig that too.
I'm on your team.
Yeah. Well, we're 6 minutes into the show. We might as well jump into the topic now. So last episode, we talked about T-Rex arms in the toll booth and the idea that sometimes there just isn't a good fit. And we decided we're going to come back and talk about strategies for dealing with those situations where you find yourself someplace where it's not working. And I this is the one of two things I hear out on the road all the time is, I can't do that because this program isn't what I thought it was going to be, or my administrator won't let me, or my coworkers won't let me, or I'm miserable here and it just doesn't work. And a lot of people find themselves staying in jobs that just aren't working because they, I don't know, don't have other options, don't want to take a risk, that kind of thing. Do you run into that too?
Well, yes, and I don't want it to sound like it's a scripted response, but I could probably, like, it's the same way that I respond when I get that feedback. Like, the first thing I try and unpack or pluck out of a scenario with somebody is the thing that is currently frustrating you. Was that something that you knew going into with this job, or did they change gears on you, right? Because that's going to then determine the next course of action. And the easiest example, and it's quite obvious, but it's easy and you'll get my point. If you accept a position at a Head Start here in the United States, 99% of the Head Start programs in the United States don't allow you to use food for anything other than eating. So imagine, like, beans and rice in the sensory tub for scooping and pouring. That's a big no-no. Colored spaghetti, that's a no-no. Okay, fine. We can unpack that another time. Point is that if you accept a position at a Head Start program, but you bring to the table an overwhelmingly huge passion for using food, you either need to put that on pause or not accept the job, right? Because Head Start's cards were on the table from the get-go, okay? Now, if you get hired at a job that at the initial interview or whatever, or your observations, clearly they're using food, and then halfway through they change their mind, then that's we're going to handle that a little bit differently. You know, if midstream, all of a sudden we've gone from being pro using food and now administration changes their mind, well, then we're going to sit down and hopefully the staff would have been a part of that conversation. But if not, you know, then there's room for going back and saying, hey, can you walk me through the process of where this midstream adjustment came from? And then, you know, the conversation could proceed from there. So that's the first thing I like to kind of find out. And then the other one, and I'm going to sound like a broken record right now for anybody who's listened to us a couple of times, is how do you know that that's really a rule? You know, is it an excuse? Is it really something you're not allowed to do? Is it just your perception? Is it something somebody has told you? So that kind of goes back to the shorthand of what page is it on? So I like to at least at first get to whether or not it's something that might be in somebody's head, a perception, versus something that's now written on paper, because that's going to determine, I think, who we talk to first.
Yeah. And I mean, you got to understand, it's like knowing the rules of the game.
Yeah.
I guess, and understanding that. And so in those situations where you find yourself where it's just not working out, and sometimes you feel like you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And,
but you do.
But you do, and I think we can break them down a little bit. I mean, one thing you can do in those situations, and they said they were a playful program, and they aren't playful, and I mean, if those situations, you can suck it up and live with things the way they are,
right?
And that will slowly and methodically eat your soul. And you will slowly over time grow angry and embittered. And that's not a really good way to, one, go through life, or two, engage children with that cloud in your mindset. But that's one thing people can do, and plenty of people do that. I think another option is you can change the system from the inside and commit yourself to that. And in my experience, that is really, really hit and miss, and mostly miss, because you're fighting windmills there. It's just a battle. It's like trying to push water back up a waterfall is the way it feels in most situations, and it's just really hard to succeed at that. Do you know anybody who's done it?
Jeff, I think, at least in my brain, and this is where I'm totally a linear kind of thinker, is if I hired you with an employee handbook that completely spelled out, you know, the expectations of what was happening in the program, and I gave you that, and then you come to me and you say, hey, you know, my co-teacher is telling me that we're not allowed to do that. I have a document that I'm able to go back to, and it kind of takes some of that emotion out of it. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are brought into programs without anybody really giving them clear, as in spelled out, expectations. And so there's a lot of room for teacher A to interpret what's going on one way and teacher B to do it the other way. And so I think teachers have more success when there's something like firm, something tangible to go back to.
Uh-huh.
Because then I can say, okay, on page 5, it says that you are or are not able to do X, Y, or Z, right? So it's like, it's a no-brainer. It says it right there. I'm sorry you didn't read it, but, you know, that behavior either needs to start happening or it needs to cease happening, depending on what the situation is.
Are you living under the misconception that people actually do what the fuck it says in their handbooks and their policies?
I'm living under the ideal dream that they were even given one in the first place, because most people that I come up to, that's my default.
It's
like, what does it say in your handbook? And they're like, we never got a handbook. I'm like, well, then that's the problem. And because there's too much room now for interpretation. So even a program with the most play-based, developmentally appropriate expectations or visions in their head, if everybody's going to, there's room to just interpret what that might or might not mean.
Yeah.
And now you pair up, right? So teacher A has been with the program for 5 years, co-teacher left, new teacher comes on, brand new, and there's nothing clear, and you're just kind of tossed in to figure it out. So in that particular scenario, there's a lot of room for the new person to think that the way teacher A is modeling it and doing it and talking about it is the be all end all of what's in the program.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's where a lot of more interpersonal issues crop up, because then new teacher is like, hey, but I was kind of told it's play based, and I'm, you know, seeing a lot of the opposite of play in mm-hmm. the classroom. And so then they come to us at a workshop and they're like, I don't know what's going on. You know, they say this, but we're doing that. And then I'm able to say, well, what's it say in the handbook? Oh, I didn't get one. Okay, then you need to have a conversation. Well, with who? Well, you need to start with your coworker. And then if that's not working, you need to go whatever the chain of command is. If you have a, you know, if you've got a lot of bureaucracy, then who's next? Who's your admin? Who's your lead? Who's the structure nowadays, you know, let's follow the hierarchy and be like, hey, I'm feeling that I've gotten some inconsistent messages, you know, compared with, you know, what I was told during an interview versus what's happening in the classroom. So let's put our cards on the table. But that also, like we said in the last episode, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of, you know, and it is sometimes easier to just say, oh, I don't even want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that. But now you've got, now it's like a bad marriage. Now, every time you go to work, you're walking on eggshells.
Uh-huh.
when really a conversation could be what either, adjusts the course, so to speak, of the direction and get everybody on the same page, or you realize, okay, everybody has given teacher A all the power. So this is the way that this program is going to be. Now I, new teacher, might need to make the choice of removing myself.
Uh-huh.
So it gets very interpersonal, and not to beat the relationship horse, but you know, this is where that comes back in. is the relationships with your coworkers, with your admin. And I just think that having a document kind of makes it, it's like a tangible touch spot. So then, you know, it has nothing to do with me not liking you. It has nothing to do with, you know, a bad attitude. It has to do that with on page three, it says that you are to be doing an art project every single day. And now the fact that your personal preferences is that you don't want to get your hands messy, that is not acceptable. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the fact that you're not doing what is spelled out as an expectation of the program.
Yeah.
And
I agree that that document can be a good tool in those situations and can be used to try to make improvements. I just don't think people are ever people are rarely successful at long-term change there, because the document spells out we need to do an art project every day. Well, then there becomes a conversation about what's an art project
that was one of my biggest lessons as an owner, was I blindly went into opening a program thinking that
people understood those things. And
that,
yeah.
And it was very, very eye-opening when I realized that there's a very fine line between being clear and spelling out your expectations and micromanaging, right? Because then I want to paint a picture of what the baseline is, like the basic expectation. And I think sometimes those kinds of documents are so overly typed out and specified that they become ceilings. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that's as far as they're willing to go. Whereas I'm just saying, you know, this is a da 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 da. And there were conversations that had to come out, because it's like, okay, if I say do an art project and you're going to Pinterest and doing copy cutting and pasting, then I need to maybe for you, teacher B, I might need to have a one-on-one conversation with you about the actual definition of what an art project. So I might need to be extra clear to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that everybody needs to have a memo sent to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you can try to change the system from inside, and those documents can really be helpful if you get them. And if the program actually has any intention or interest in actually living up to those documents and actually acting in those ways. And if you come into a program and they're like, they say they're play-based, but I think we need to do more messy play, or we need to have more risky play and that kind of stuff, and you decide you're going to kind of rewire the personality of the program from the inside, it's going to be, at best, a hard uphill battle. And at worst, it's going to make you resent people.
No.
I mean, maybe it's gonna hurt relationships, and it's gonna add a little bit extra friction to your day. But I mean, that's one of the choices. You live with it, you try to change it. But then I think the other choice is you walk away.
Yeah.
And you go do something else.
Well, and that's, let me jump in one quick second. I think that's another reason I'm trying to spoke it with some of the other topics that we've addressed.
Yeah.
To like, and you said like risky play or messy play. So if I walk in and I've not been told that I can't do this, it's just the culture of the program has been that they aren't doing it. I'm going to slowly just start doing it. I'm not going to make a grand announcement. You know, it's like it's like slowly turning up the heat in the water. I'm not going to like go in all guns a-blazing, because that will alienate everybody unintentionally, perhaps, and unnecessarily. You don't need to do that. It's slowly. It's a little bit at a time. And those baby steps might be very, very baby. It might be that now, instead of the sensory tub being out on Friday, it's out on Wednesday and Friday, right? And then it's out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I really want our listeners to hear that if you're in it for the long haul, like if you kind of get the vibe that where you are is a good fit, but maybe just
needs some tweaking,
because maybe they've drifted, because maybe they have all been there for a long time, and you need to be okay with some of those adjustments being that small. And the other thing I think you need to be ready to do, and this goes back to both the Playvolution website and then also the binder challenge, right, which is essentially the same thing, having the resources and the articles at your disposal because you're familiar with them. So if somebody does say, oh, you know what, you know, we've never really done a lot of that, you know, I see that the kids are really responding to it. You know, let me learn some more about it. Then boom, now you have a link there to give them more of that data and the information that supports it, that it's not just the way you want it done. It's not Lisa Murphy's preference. It's what we know a high quality program. It's a component of a high quality program, and very slow and very subtle. And I think there's also room, depending on how your program is literally set up, there's room for just shutting the door and doing it.
Doing your thing.
Just close the door.
Yeah.
Close the door. And if you feel confident and can quote unquote defend what's going on in your program, you know, then sometimes just shut the door and ask for forgiveness and not permission.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good strategy if you're going to try to change from within. And I think you talk about baby steps, but really we're talking about maybe in some cases it's like not just a baby steps, but like a baby steps of a baby glacier.
Yes.
You're just this tiny little baby glacier just moving millimeters at a time. And frankly, administrators and coworkers are probably so busy and stressed out with other stuff that if you move slow enough over time, you probably can make some big changes, but rarely easy.
Well, and the thing I've gotten feedback on too is that what a lot of times admin and coworkers notice first is the decrease, okay, in behavior issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is slowly, subtly, perhaps like they didn't notice it, you've been increasing like rich, engaging experiences and activities for the children, and then the behaviors start to go down. So then admin is like, oh my God, you know, David is never in my office anymore. I'm wondering what's going on. And then you circle back to it. Now at that juncture, I think the behavior card becomes so powerful to a lot of people that they're not willing to mess up what has been happening, even though it's not messed up, but you know, they're like, wow, we're not really sure what's been going on, but this is something we're really excited about. What is going on? And you're like, well, you know, I've been doing da 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 da. And so even though there might not have been initial buy-in, had you spelled that out to people, they can't now ignore it, right? They're like, wow, the behavior problems are starting to go away, and it seems to be kind of linked to this variable over here. Why would I stop that?
Yeah. And if that gets you forward motion and progress, and you can actually smile for real at work and sleep at night, well worth the effort. I think before we wrap up, I mentioned the other choice in those situations is to move on. Now you can either try to move on to a program where there's a better fit, and we've talked about that before. And you do your homework and you get that handbook ahead of time, and you ask questions and you observe, and you don't just take the job because it's the job and it's close to your house. You take the job because you feel that you fit there. Or in that situation, you can quit and go work in a different profession, or in this profession in a different capacity, and that's an option. Or you can go start your own program. And those really are the options that we have in those situations. And so you either live with it and you suck it up and you're miserable, or you live with it and you try to change things. Baby steps work best from inside. Or you quit and you find someplace where you fit, you find a different profession, or you start your own show. And I mean, we've both done the start your own show version of things, and we've both done the try to fix things from the inside version of things.
Yep. And I've done the quit thing.
Yeah.
I've
me too. And so which did you find personally more satisfying, or were they all different, all kind of the same, or what was your experience with that?
Well, the quitting was because the program was just grossly inconsistent, and I just can't stand that. So, I mean, that's, you know, neither here nor there, and not very dramatic, just pretty straightforward.
Uh-huh.
Being fired for what I believed in philosophically, that was kind of an eye opener.
Kind of feels
like,
good.
Wow, yeah, I had the balls to actually say, yeah, well, then fire me then. And then they did. Like, oh, okay. I think my first transition from working for other people to opening the family childcare was probably hindsight 2020, and I can't say I've really thought about this a lot except right this second. That was probably the change that broadened my horizons and deepened my commitment to what I was saying I believed in. That first leap from being a three-year-old teacher at a, you know, a child care center to going, I'm opening a family child care. And that's when, I think that's when I, my eyes were open on so many different levels. Yeah. I think that was probably, and that was, I think, the push that allowed me to grow the most as a professional in this field.
Yeah, for me too, going from center director to running our family child care program, that was for me. It was also for me, it was the scariest of those transitions.
I still have the notes that I wrote, like the pros and the cons and like what is the worst thing that would possibly happen. And, you know, and that was very helpful for me. What is the worst thing that's going to possibly happen? You know,
I just think that level of trusting in yourself and doing the scary thing anyway, even though you're not 100%. I mean, this is a risky thing, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think that's a good feeling to have. I've said that on the podcast probably too many times, but it moves you, it thrusts you forward in life a lot of the time. And I don't know, I just very rarely look back at those experiences negatively because they tend to work out, huh? At least that's...
I don't want to get all sappy, but I mean, that is why I am here. I mean, that's what my trajectory has been in three major situations because I was like, screw it, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's always been nothing but a leap forward. Doesn't mean it was easy, but it was always forward. Forward motion.
Yeah, I would say not necessarily easy, and maybe not even successful. But if you walk away learning something for the next thing you take on, even when things flop a little bit or don't turn out the way you planned or expected or hoped, you can often walk away with good knowledge and information and insight and personal growth that helps you with the next thing you take on.
There are two times that I feel that. Because I didn't listen, I deviated from what I knew needed to happen. And those in my brain were the two times that the business / company / whatever you want to call it. It wasn't like a flop, but it was like, okay, this is a reminder that when you stay true to your goal and to your mission and your focus, you're doing what you need to do. So it wasn't the risk that I think led to what I would look back on and go like it was not successful. It wasn't the risk component. Mm-hmm. It was that I deviated from the course that I was on. That's a whole conversation
that's
in and of
that's
itself.
A whole other podcast.
You know, it is.
Should we wrap this one up? We're coming up on half an hour. That's a good hunk of pod. Hey,
yes.
we cast another pod for you people. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Back soon with another episode. If you like the show, you know, share the show with somebody else that you might think will like it. That's all we ask. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're clear. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.